Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook podcast. If you have enjoyed following along and tuning in, please subscribe and give us 5 stars. And if you don't, I will have my mom call your principal and get you fired. On today's episode, we have Coach Donna Moyer from Sacred Heart. Over many years, Coach Moyer has developed Sacred Heart into a perennial powerhouse and has coached dozens of Division I talent and developed even more lifelong relationships. Enjoy. Joining the podcast today is 3-time KHSAA state champion and head coach of the Sacred Heart Valkyries, Donna Moyer. Coach Moyer is currently 6th on the all-time wins list in the state of Kentucky and has a lot more to come. A regular in the top 5 and your 2019 7th region champion, we're grateful to have Coach Moyer with us. Coach, thanks for joining the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Wyatt. I think you're doing a great job with girls basketball, really promoting it with these podcasts.
Well, I appreciate it. I think our state has so much talent on the girls' side, and there's not talent on the boys' side, but you can just look by, how many athletes are going to play at a high level collegiately on the girls' side from our state. And it's just, it just speaks volumes for how much our girls are putting in. And so I think there's we can make a big deal about them and hopefully grow our game from a lot of different standpoints. But I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. I listen every week, so that's good.
I'll make sure not to share anything, anything too secret. Not that we have much.
I hear you.
Well, with the wealth of knowledge and experience, I'd like to get into tackling some issues and topics that come up most often when I'm talking to other coaches. I think you can give some good insight and. I think as head coaches, sometimes we fall into this idea that since we're the head of the program and that everybody in the program looks to us for answers, that we have to have all the answers. And, I think that was a huge weakness of mine early in my career was I failed to ask for help or, to see how other people did things. So hopefully we can knock some of those items out, as well as talk about what's allowed you guys to sustain a high level of success. In that, let's just start right there is what has allowed you guys to sustain such a high level of success over a long period of time?
Well, I think that a big part of us is the tradition of Sacred Heart. We started in 1875, so we've been around for a long time. And, we captured an early state championship in 1976, one of the first two. And we're fortunate that we get some good athletes that come through, but, I always try to, with my coaching staff, to surround myself with good people. And, as everybody does when they first get into coaching, you try to control everything and you realize like, it's a big job, it's a big job to be a head coach. And, there's so many facets of being a coach that, I think I've done a good job of, surrounding myself with good coaches, good players, and, a program that kids want to come and play.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, that's, something I didn't realize until I had really got here. I mean, you hear it, but, with Louisville basketball, I mean, it's just different. You have so many kids that have so many choices and there's great programs everywhere. There's good coaches everywhere. And so you really do have to, I think you have to sell yourself. I think you have to sell your program, but I think you also have to build genuine relationships, which is something I think you've done a really good job of. But, a reality for all high school coaches is that we are dealing with kids who have parents that very much care about their happiness and their experiences. And, that's a great thing. I think it's great that our parents care about their kids, but, it can also be a negative thing when we don't allow kids to experience failure. What are some tips you have for young coaches, especially on how to handle those maybe extra invested parents, and maybe talk about some of the mistakes you made in the past that people can avoid?
I think that one of the best things for coaches is communication. In today's world, there's no reason for anybody not to know anything. So I think we do a great job of communicating to parents, communicating to our kids. I mean, it used to be where you started out and you told the kids at the end of practice, hey, we're practicing tomorrow at 5:00, da da da. And now, we send out emails, we send out texts, we have social media. So we, communication is huge You know, and you get the buy-in from the parents. You know, everybody does a preseason meeting. You know, we do that. We kind of lay out, you know, how we're going to coach. And, you know, I tell all these parents, like, hey, I'm going to coach your kids like I'm going to coach one of my daughters, and I'm going to love them like I love one of my own kids. And, you know, I think that goes into building relationships and trust. And, you know, you do get that difficult parent every once in a while, but I've been fortunate that, you know, I've had a lot of good parents. I have the buy-in. You know, we meet with the kids 2 to 3 times a week, a season, and kind of tell them, you know, here's where we see you playing. You know, here's what you got to work on. You know, all that kind of stuff. So our communication, I think, is huge and a big part of our success. And I think another part of it is, you know, we're going to play anybody anywhere. So we're going to travel. You know, we've always taken an out of town trip every season. And, you know, and I think that builds a community. You know, we're with our parents a lot. You know, so when you're traveling, you know, we generally have a parent from every family go. So I think that, you know, they see how hard we work, and you get some buy-in from them.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, one thing I try to share when people do bring up, you know, parents, you know, first, you know, try to shake that negative stigma of, you know, oh, I have to deal with parents. Like, no, we're working alongside them. You know, we want the same thing for their kids. We want their kids to be happy and enjoy it. Now, they may want their kid to get more shots than we want them to get, but, you know, if we can get to the main thing and we can both keep the main thing, then I think that helps. But, you know, it's like you said, at some point, if you coach long enough, you're going to get a difficult parent. I mean, it's just a reality. You just can't avoid it. And so I think, you know, just to have some things in your back pocket, some things to think about. Somebody told me this, and I've done it ever since, is I keep a running log. If I have a kid who I know their parent may be an issue, or even if I suspect they might, I will record every time that player has a negative interaction, whether it be with another player, a coach, an assistant coach, a teacher, and we'll just date those. And it could be minor, it could be major, but we just keep a Google Doc, a running Google Doc, and we'll just have the date and just a brief, like, you know, hey, so-and-so, you know, gave coach attitude by doing this, this, and this. And we just keep this log. And every time we have a meeting, we keep a log. And so, you know, when at the end of the season or whenever that is, if they want to complain to an athletic director, to a principal, whoever they, you know, they might try to go straight to the president of the United States, some of these parents. But, you know, we just have that to kind of sit down and say, okay, well, look, I understand you had concerns, but here's a list of 25 times X player had a negative interaction. And that puts, I think, a lot of merit into what you're saying, and just kind of has your back a little more than some he said, she said. And, you know, you're an athletic director, so you actually get to see both sides of that.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, and that's, you know, I'm fortunate. I work for great, you know, I've had great administrators at Sacred Heart, and they support the athletic program. But, you know, I always tell everybody, like, little problems become big problems. So, you know, nip those little problems in the bud before they become big problems. And I think that's really worked for us. You know, direct contact, you know, if it is, and let's get the parents, let's get the kid, you know, let's get another coach. You know, we always meet with another coach. Let's get them in the room and let's talk about it. You know, let's don't let this explode into something huge. So we try to, like I said, little problems become big problems, and we try to nip those things in the bud. But, you know, like I said, I'm fortunate at Sacred Heart. You know, our kids are driven. They generally all do excellent in the classroom. But with that comes big expectations from the parents too, and the kids. And you got to be able to handle that. And, you know, I'm competitive. I want to win everything I do. If I'm playing, you know, wiffle ball with the kids, I'm going to be on that winning team. So, I think that helps, knowing that they know I'm competitive, and that I feel like they know I have their best interest at heart.
Yeah. I think you bring up a really good point there is, you know, the parents are, they're going to be heard. I mean, they want, and if you won't talk to them, if you won't address those things, then, you know, it might be in the stands, it might be in a, you know, but they're going to say their piece. So I think by tackling those things head on, you probably save yourself a lot of heartache of, you know, of people complaining behind closed doors with other people. So I think that's really wise. Let's shift away from the negativity. I'm already getting a little anxious. Let's talk about assistant coaches. I know you've got an excellent staff and an experienced staff, and maybe just kind of hit on how you use those guys and ladies and how they help your program.
I have four assistant coaches. As a staff, like they might be the head freshman coach or head JV coach or, you know, assistant varsity coach. But then when it comes to everybody, we all coach together. So we're kind of coaching the same system throughout the program. I had one of my assistant coaches this year do all our preseason conditioning, and she was tough, you know, and I said, you know, from day one, like, get on them and, you know, to get some buy-in. And so they get used to listening to her. You know, we have, I just feel like, I'm not going to, the kids hear me all the time. So, and I want my assistant coaches to be involved. You know, they've been around basketball. They've coached other places. So if they have a good idea, let's bring it. Let's talk about it behind my, you know, in the office, let's take it out to the court. You know, we might not all agree on something, but when we walk out of my office, we're going to agree. And, I give them some leeway, which, I'm sure a lot of other coaches might not, but, I feel like they bring a lot. I've coached for a long time. So it helps me to keep new ideas in our program and see what the younger kids are, the younger programs are doing. So, and we have fun. I mean, we go out to dinner, they come over to our house. I mean, you know, we all have fun together and I try to make it fun. Like I said, a competitive atmosphere too.
How do you utilize your assistants when it comes to scouting? And, if you're getting ready for an opponent, maybe do you have them, tackle a portion of the scout, a portion of the, the game plan, or how are they involved in that piece of it?
We'll have one of our assistants do most of the scouting, and we'll all go scout together. We see a lot of coaches at games. I mean, I like to go to live games, and then we'll get film on kids, on teams, and we'll put together like a one page scout on each team and give it to our players. And we spend about 10 to 15 minutes, going over that scout before a game. And we'll work like, if we know we're going to play some, or we're going to have to go through, in the seventh region, it's a dogfight. So, if we have a week or two where we're, it might be a little break in our schedule, we might go over some things that we might see in the tournament and kind of not say, hey, this is Christian Academy or this is Manual or something, whoever, but we'll go over that, we'll go over some sets. And so then when we're in the regional or something like that, it's not all new to them. So, I use my people and I think that makes them want to coach for us too.
That's huge. And I think again, for young coaches or even old coaches, I mean, anybody, the more you can build that buy-in from them, the more you let them do. And, the more that kids get to hear their voice, that's going to build that respect with the players, for those coaches, but it's also gonna, make them want to work harder for you and want to work harder practice. I've watched practices where the assistants stood around with their hands on their hips the entire time, and that the assistants would go off to a corner and just kind of talk and hang out, and you're like, well, man, I think you'd probably be a lot more efficient. And I had a huge problem about that when I first started, and I just kind of learned to let go a little bit and trust those guys to do what you hired them for.
Yeah, I mean, you can see them on timeouts on film. You want to know if they're paying attention or not, for sure. So, I think it's good. We're fortunate that we've got a lot of kids that they want to be in the gym all the time, And so I every night, if there's an open time, they want to shoot, and we have to have somebody there. So, if one of my coaches can go up there and shoot with them, then I'm like, hey, go do that. But, we always have to have a coach there, but I used to think, God, I have to be there all the time. And I'm there 95% of the time, but I don't, I know I can trust, my staff. If they, somebody wants to go up and shoot or work out, then that's fine with me.
You had mentioned the buy-in thing with your kids, and, you know, just honestly, I think today more than ever, and I think it's going to continue in this direction, is it can be hard to get kids to buy into what you're doing, you know, not just from an X's and O's standpoint, but also a culture standpoint. That can be a challenge, even more so now that they play on different travel teams, they have different trainers, they're getting so much input from outside sources. You know, and the more spotlight that becomes on girls basketball through social media and everything, I think you just get more people who want to be a part of that and a part of those kids' success. So there's just so much coming at them from so many different places. And we know this is just, it's not an individual sport, it's a team sport. So what are some things you do or you've done that have been successful in building that buy-in to what you're doing just in every phase of your program?
I mean, I think that, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, roles and what your role is and, you know, winning, you know, if you're winning and it's, I don't like win at all costs, but if you're winning as a team and, you know, you're getting the finals of tournaments, like we tell our kids, like coaches are going to know that, you know, they want kids out of winning programs. They want kids that, you know, can play a system and, you know, and play for each other. And we really, I think we do a good job of that, you know, because they know they're going to get seen. We're going to do whatever we can to make these kids better, not only on the court, in the classroom, off the court, you know, because I tell them when they come to school, I'm like, get involved in everything. You know, I mean, we've had, like this year's team, we had three starters that were two sport athletes. I mean, that's kind of unheard of and soccer, volleyball, you know, cross country. You know, we know, you know, the roles are important, how they play that. And you know, we don't care who gets the credit. We're just kind of playing for each other and, you know, and we take it one game at a time. You know, we're not looking ahead. We're looking at our next opponent and you know, getting ready for that. And, you know, I think people know, you know, the kids know, they know who the best players on the team are and they know who should be getting those minutes and that's, you know, and what they have to do. I mean, I think we're pretty clear on what they have to do to get time on the floor.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I think, you know, I think one thing that's to just to kind of add is, you know, I think maybe the hardest part of getting that buy-in is maybe the most important part, and that is those guys. You know, it's not hard to convince the kid who's going to shoot 15 shots a game to go shoot 15 shots, but you know, the kid you need to go and you know, the kid that's, you need to set a bunch of screens, or need to go get you some, you know, stick backs, or you need to be your tough guy, you know, getting those guys bought in, getting your seventh, eighth guys bought in. And you know, I think something specific that we do and that I've done in the past is we try to make a big deal about those guys, whatever the role part for us is. You know, like right now we're not a heavy screening team, but when I've had teams that we screen a bunch and we screen in transition, you know, we may chart screen assists. That may be important to us at one time. And so when we chart that, you know, we'll have a weekly winner. You know, anybody can go set screen, you know, anybody can go set screens. And so we just make a big deal about that. So we will have a weekly winner where if you lead us in screen assists that week of practice, the next week you get to wear, we got a gold jersey that they wear, and they get to pick what music we listen to in pre-practice that week. And that we also kind of tweet that out. And we just try to make a big deal about those kids. In film, we'll stop when we have a really good screen and we'll just make a huge deal about that kid and everybody will get excited for them. And I think with girls, it's boys too, but especially with girls, what gets praised gets repeated. And man, if we can just make a big deal about those things, then I think you can set yourself up to get kids to buy into doing some things that they otherwise maybe wouldn't get heralded.
Yeah, I mean, that's true for us too. Like we have a big poster in our gym, I mean, in our locker room that, you know, we put helmets and hearts for our goals, you know, if we don't, and it's, they're all pretty much team goals. You know, we try to applaud, you know, defense is huge for us. And we always tell people, like, if you want to play, then you got to be able to defend. Cause we know we know we can score, but you got to be able to defend. And then we also like, we do like what we call topper offers, you know, where, if we had a good week, a good win, you know, I might go buy them some ice cream or, you know, everything needs like a topper offer. So, you know, if we have a day where, you know, we, you know, beat a, like I said, beat a big opponent or win a big tournament, then, you know, we're going to celebrate, because I think one thing, if anything, I learned is, you know, like when we had that run where we won all those state championships, you know, it was like, okay, we won. Now what's next, you know, and I don't want to screw up the next year, and I don't want to screw up the next year. So like really like celebrating the little things. And those were big things, but you know, you were, you know, like I said, I was so afraid that you knew you had a great team and you didn't want to mess it up, but you've got to enjoy the little moments along the way. And you got to give those kids a reason to come back in the gym and, to want to be in the gym and want to be with each other. So, I mean, we did a lot of different things this year. You know, we did yoga at 6 a.m., like, you know, five or six times. You know, we would play music during games. You know, we'd have speakers come in. You know, we did a lot of things to kind of, you know, the sprint, the running, all, you know, my former players are all like, God, Coach Moore, you've gotten soft, you know, because we didn't do a lot. Of, you know, we used to do a 2 mile time where they had to run it in 16 minutes, you know, to make varsity. You know, now we're down to like a mile. But we do, you know, we try to make it fun and make it where the kids want to be in the gym. And, you know, we do a lot of service. You know, we go work lots of camps. We do a lot of things to be together. Like my team, like my the last couple of years, my team, they couldn't be together enough. And so you've got to create opportunities for them to be together, for them, you know, they'll do a lot off the floor together, but, you know, the things we did together, not only on the court, but off the court, I think really helped build our team chemistry and helped our success.
Yeah, that's, you can't hear that enough, because of, you know, what we're asking them to do on the floor and all of their individual goals. I think that they're more willing to put some of those things aside when they care about each other and they learn who each other really are as more than just a basketball player. So that's really good. Let's get into some special situation stuff. I think one area as coaches that we may end up looking back, especially when they bite us, those years where those late game situations bite us, you know, we go, oh man, I wish I'd been ready for that. You know, are there any scenarios that come to mind from your time coaching? And you know, now how do you go about prepping for special situations, late game situations? You know, and then I think the other thing I'd like to know is at what point in the season do you start working on those? I know some people work on them in June and some don't work on them until January. So how do you tackle all that stuff?
You know, we tackle it. We work special situations a lot. You know, where we'll do a blue team, a white team, or well, it's red now, our jersey's red. But and we'll have like one of our assistant coaches will go over and draw up a play, and then we'll come out and we'll, you know, how we're going to defend it. So we'll do a lot of like, you know, we'll sit here and we'll pick a defense and the other team will pick an offense, you know, a play, and we'll run that against the defense. You know, I've had, gosh, the first year we won the state tournament, we were playing Mercy and we were down the entire game. And, you know, in 5.4 seconds on the clock, you know, they make a free throw to go up one. And, you know, I'm sitting on, you know, they call timeout and we're like, hey, we practice this, you know, anything under 6 seconds, we're going to the basket, you know, and we're fortunate that they missed and we came down and the ball rolls through the thing right at the end. But we had practiced that situation. You know, there's other situations that maybe not, you know, we weren't necessarily ready for, but players make plays and you got to be able to get the ball in the right people's hands at the end of the game. But we do work a lot on that. And, you know, whether it's a 3-pointer you need at the buzzer or, you know, you need to get a stop, we definitely work on that.
At what point in the season do you start, you know, going through that stuff and working on it or really kind of hitting on it?
Oh, we do like after the LIT, like through February, then we're working on that. You know, we scale down our practices. You know, we usually start going like 2 hours. We'll scale our practices down to an hour, hour and a half. But most of the time we're sitting in there, we're going to be working on special situations, you know, 15, 20 minutes, probably 3 to 4 times a week.
Is there any, are there any like specific scenarios that come to mind where, you know, you got caught, you know, I mean, you know, I can think of a dozen times that, you know, I late in the game where, you know, I'm like, oh man, you know, I wish we had something for this, whether it was, you know, we needed something to get it in just from the sideline and we didn't have it, or, you know, is there anything like that, you know, comes to mind that maybe you can save somebody else the heartache of making that same mistake?
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously our regional finals, you know, in 2018, we lost to Manuel. We had a really good team, needed a three at the end of the game. You know, I think I obviously wish I would have been a lot more clear coming out of the timeout. So yeah, I mean, and you think about those, you know, you, when it doesn't work, like you think about it all the time and, you know, you put yourself out there because you're out there in front of 1500 people, whatever, and it necessarily didn't work, but, you know, hopefully we'll grow from that and be a little bit more prepared.
You plan for a million things as a coach and, you know, it's just, especially when it's a season ending type thing. I look back and there's been times where, you know, your heart breaks cause you feel like you just didn't have your team ready. And, I've had seasons end in the regional finals and overtime on a buzzer beater when we're sitting here playing a box and chase or defense. And that's how our season ends after, you know, we've played a style all year. So I just try to share as many of those moments as I can to, I think when you hear someone else talk about it, it usually hits home and it makes me think. So I think that's good for people. Let's go ahead. And,
I laugh all the time regional this year, like our regionals, we didn't have any real close games. So I was kind of relieved about that. So that was good.
I wish. Good for you. You guys played an excellent tournament. And it's a weird deal. It's such a weird deal having two regionals play their finals on the same game. So we're getting ready to go out for warmups and you guys are like, you know, like celebrating, you're going to the state tournament. It's just, I don't know. It's just a weird deal.
You always want to get that first game for sure.
Yeah. I know. I hated that piece to it, but it'll flip next year, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Good. All right. Let's move to the last segment. I'm going to throw a full court press on you. You'll have about 10 seconds or less to answer these rapid fire questions. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Does high school need a shot clock? Can you hear me? Does high school need a shot clock?
Yeah, I can hear you. No, they do not.
Okay, if you're up three with 8 seconds to go at half court, are you fouling or are you playing it out?
We're going to play it out.
Favorite high school gym you've coached in besides your own?
I knew you were going to ask me this. Well, Valley High School, when you win. That's a great drive home after you got a good victory.
Oh, that's a terrible gym. Who do you hate coaching against the most?
That's a good one. Probably I got a couple of them. And not that I hate it. It's just, I really, you know, I look forward to it. I'd say like Chris Souter, Mark Evans, those two. I like going against UY because I always know I'm going to see something I haven't seen. So that's where I'd go.
Yeah. And get a win. So,
there you go.
best kept secret food joint in Louisville.
I'll go with Taco Lucador. That's my nephew's place, so I'll go with that in St. Matthews.
That's a good one. It's right around the corner from where I live, and it's a good one. Coach, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge. You guys have been so good for so long. I hope everybody's able to tune in and take away some things to make their program better.
All right. Thanks, Wyatt. Have a good day.
You too, Coach. See you. For Coach Moyer, this has been Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. Join us next Thursday as we have James Jackson, the head coach of the Georgetown Tigers, on to talk about transitioning from high school to college and what athletes can do to get better and how we can help prepare them. Until then, keep getting better.